Good morning. Welcome to the 11th Circuit. We're very happy to have you here with us today. Just a quick reminder on our lighting system, although I'm sure you're all familiar with it. When the yellow light goes on, that means you have 2 minutes left to your speaking time. When the red light goes on, your time is up. We ask that you please respect the lighting system and stop promptly when the red light goes on. The only exception is if we've asked you a question, we do want to hear your answer, even if it takes you over the time. And with that, we'll begin today with a case of Jones versus United States of America and the TVA. We'll hear first from Mr. Rouse.
May it please the court. The Suits and Admiralty Act permits suit against the government if the same action can be maintained against a private person. The Supreme Court in Eastern Transport said that the government may be sued without anomaly and exactly as a private person unless the government shows that a statutory exception exists. The former Fifth Circuit said the same in DeBartolomé and specifically rejected an argument that any FTCA defense applies to SAA claims.
Yeah, but we said that was mere dictum, didn't we?
A panel called that case dictum.
Yeah.
The broader holding in that case very specifically says that the SAA language is plain, that it is only limited by the exceptions within the Act. There are no exceptions within the Act that were covered by any that might have been covered under a similar FTCA case. In fact, the claims in that case were not for misrepresentation, as the panel had summarized. Instead, in note 5 in the DeBartolomé decision, they said that the claim was for general negligence.
Well, why don't you tell us about Cranford versus the United States?
Cranford, it says, is just another case that follows the panel decision, simply accepting that the SAA can be rewritten to impose FTCA exceptions onto it by the judiciary.
Well, what Cranford says is there's a waiver of sovereign immunity in the Suits and Admiralty Act, but it is subject to the discretionary function exception in the Federal Torts Claims Act. So I might agree with you that maybe that's wrong, but aren't we bound by our prior panel precedent rule? We're bound by that decision.
No, Your Honor. And that is because the prior panel decision, even when they conflict like this, the prior panel decision may be overturned, or it already has been overturned, because of what the Supreme Court has said since then.
You mean abrogated?
Yes, it's been abrogated completely by what the Supreme Court says. And that is repeating the same rules that have applied for 250 years. And
are you talking about Thacker?
Thacker and many other cases which say that Congress has the plenary power over the jurisdiction of the lower courts, that Congress alone has the power to waive the government's immunity.
Yeah, but the problem, as you know, is that to abrogate our prior precedent, it has to be on all fours. And Thacker was about the TVA Act. It wasn't about the SAA. So, and you've talked about other more general more general holdings, I guess, from the Supreme Court, but it doesn't really satisfy our requirement that it be on all fours, unless maybe I'm missing something, and then feel free to let me know.
Sure. So when you look at Williams and its progeny, it is a judicially created exception that in very clear terms rewrites the Suits and Admiralty Act. It imposed FTCA exceptions onto the Admiralty Act. Since then, the court has repeated all of these rules, which say that the scope of immunity waivers trains on the statutory text, that the judiciary cannot rewrite any statute or negate a claim that Congress has authorized, and that courts violate the separation of powers when they decline the jurisdiction on them that Congress has conferred.
And so, the ultimate upshot, I guess, of Williams is that there is an exception that is imported into the SAA, and that is not the ultimate holding of these other cases that you're talking about. In fact, in Thacker, even though it's under the TVA Act, the TVA Act, the Supreme Court has said that it's possible that there could be this discretionary function exception. But you have to look at this two-part test in order to determine whether it applies in any given case. And so that is the problem, because it doesn't seem like it's on all fours. I mean, don't get me wrong. Our case law on this may be wrong, but we have to deal with the prior precedent rule and all that comes with it. And so if you want to get past that, I need a very specific way to do that. And that is the problem that I think we have here.
And sure. So the way to do that is by saying that broad rules are broad rules. They cannot be ignored or labeled dictum through some banal distinctions by saying that, well, I know the Supreme Court has broadly said that the judiciary cannot rewrite statutes or import immunity back into a immunity waiver designed to waive that immunity.
But let me ask you a question. Wasn't that the law before Williams came out?
It was, and it's the law today that it's been repeated since then.
So we have, under our prior precedent rule, something that says there's no exception for an overlooked case, right? An overlooked precedent. So if that hasn't changed and it was the same before Williams and now it's the same after Williams, how can we use that as a handle? I mean, maybe this is a good candidate for en banc rehearing, and I think you all thought that because you sought to bring it initially en banc. And that might well be the answer to the problem. But with respect to our panel hearing this, we have to deal with those problems.
This court is obligated to follow the Supreme Court decisions. And the Supreme Court decisions since Williams, since Cranford, has broadly said that courts cannot do exactly what Williams did. And so when we look at the prior panel decisions, the question becomes, have the fundamental props upon which Williams was based been destroyed? Have they been eviscerated? And the answer is clearly yes, because the Supreme Court has broadly said time and time again that this cannot be done. Congress controls when immunity is waived, and when Congress says these kinds of claims or any kinds of claims may be brought.
Can you cite another circuit that agrees with you?
No other circuit that I would agree with, but they have the same problems that exist with Williams.
As a matter of fact, all of the other circuits that have addressed this issue have disagreed with you, right?
All of the other circuits have, well, we have the DeBartolo decision that then was changed in Williams, and that's also happened in, and I believe it was the Sixth or the Eighth Circuit. But yeah, all of the other circuits that have directly addressed this issue have said this does not apply. But what is clear in every circuit is that these courts are violating the very separation of powers in the Constitution by rewriting a congressional statute. Williams very, very clearly said we are importing the discretionary function exception of 2680A onto the SAA, because we, the judiciary, do not believe that the statute is right. That cannot be done. And the Supreme Court has time and again said, we cannot rewrite statutes. The statutes are what govern the lower court jurisdiction.
Well, let me ask you this now. There's an alternative ground for dismissal in this case, and that's the failure to state a claim upon which relief can be granted. How can the United States and the TVA have a duty to protect your clients from their injury if they didn't know that the duck blind existed? It's a privately owned duck blind, right? And I don't think there are any allegations in your complaint that the United States even knew that it was there.
Which is the negligence in and of itself here. This is a duck blind that somebody put up on federal land and has been sitting on federal land for at least 16 years before this.
And the government didn't even know it was there. So how do they have a duty to protect your clients from injury from the duck blind if they didn't even know it was there?
So conceptually, it's no different than a wet floor at a store. That at a certain point when that wet floor exists for so long, the store had an obligation. They were put on notice of the hazard, and they have an obligation to remove it. It's conceptually no different. So here, this duck blind existed in the middle of the lake, right in between the commercial boat traffic channel and where the speedboats are going by with water skiers. It's right there. And at night, It is required to be lighted. That is what a reasonable person would do. Here, the government did not light it. So another person.
So you have an allegation in your complaint that the government should have known that it was there?
Yes, because it had existed for at least 16 years before this. They're on notice. They mapped the area. They are responsible by agreement and by statute for maintaining the area for travel. And they didn't do it. And this was a hazard. And no one has really disputed that. In fact, in the government's first motion dismissed prior to amending the complaint, they admitted that it was a hazard. They even argued that it was so hazardous that it was open and obvious and should have been discovered. So there's no dispute here that this was a hazard and could present the possibility for harm. And they didn't do anything about it despite having notice for 16 years. And the point is, a private person could be sued for that conduct. The Suits and Admiralty Act says that the government can be sued wherever a private person can be sued.
Spent most of your time talking about the SAA. With regard to the TVA, do you think that there is still an avenue to sue the TVA through the TVA Act, even if we disagree with you about the Suits and Admiralty Act?
Absolutely. Thacker's clear. TVA Act waives the TVA's immunity. The TVA Act is specific to the TVA. The specific governs the general. And in Thacker, the Supreme Court very, very clearly said that this sort of defense does not apply to the TVA, which was also a boating incident on the
But then we'd have to find that the SAA is not the exclusive remedy here.
I don't think that if the SAA is exclusive, then it is only exclusive if it provides a remedy. If, as the government says, it does not provide a remedy because of the discretionary function exception, then it no longer is exclusive and the plaintiffs can proceed under the TVA Act. So one way or another, either way you slice it, the TVA Act is the TVA is in this case pursuant to Thacker.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Rouse. You've reserved 4 minutes. We'll hear next from Mr. Shaw.
May it please the court, Whaley Shaw for the United States, addressing the claims regarding the U.S. Coast Guard and the Army Corps of Engineers. This court, like almost every other circuit, has multiple decades of precedent holding that the Suits and Admiralty Act contains an implied discretionary function exception, and plaintiffs have identified no permissible reason for ignoring that precedent. Now, as the Ninth Circuit concluded in the Fiedler decision, the Supreme Court's decision in Thacker is consistent with circuit precedent, and it certainly does not abrogate this court's decisions. To abrogate circuit precedent, Thacker would have to be clearly on point, and its holding, not just its reasoning, would have to directly conflict with this court's decisions.
I'd like to take you to a couple of other issues, if I could. Sure. First, I'd like to ask you a little bit about what Judge Wilson was asking about, which is whether there is an alternative basis for affirming here, which is dismissal for failure to state a claim. Your friend on the other side of the aisle there says that no, there is no alternative basis because the duck blind was there for 16 years and the complaint alleges that that the government should have known about it because it was there for 16 years. So I want to get your position on that. And then second, I'd like to hear from you about whether you think the SAA is the exclusive remedy here, and if so, why?
Fortunately, I don't think I can offer a very satisfying answer on either one of those questions. I do think that the absence of a duty could be an alternative basis for affirmance, but the United States did not brief that in our briefs, but I think TVA's counsel will appear after me, and I think they are better equipped to address that argument.
Okay, because as you know, we can affirm on any basis that appears in the record. That's why I'm asking about it.
Yes, so I do think it would be a permissible basis, but I'm not the best equipped to provide all the reasons for doing so. I do think that it is a straight, certainly with regard to the United States, it is a straightforward application of panel precedent. I don't think there's any difficulty with simply stating that, you know, this court, again, has 4 decades of precedent holding that the Suits and Admiralty Act has a discretionary function exception, that precedent has not been abrogated, and therefore that the discretionary function exception should apply to preclude plaintiff's suit against the United States. So, while I recognize there may be alternative bases for affirmance, I think that that's the most straightforward way for this court to rule, at least with respect to the United States.
Can you speak at all about whether the SAA is an exclusive remedy?
Certainly, there are decisions of this court and other courts saying that the Suits and Admiralty Act is the exclusive way to proceed against the United States in admiralty cases, and I think, you know, that would certainly support TVA's position that it is an exclusive remedy. But we did not brief that issue, and I'm not well equipped to address those arguments. But if the court has any interest, I'm happy to address Thacker and why it does not abrogate this court's precedents on the discretionary function exception. First, it's important to remember that Thacker expressly held that there could be an implied exception to the TVA's TVA Act's waiver of sovereign immunity for governmental activities. So it expressly rejected plaintiff's proposition that the absence of an express textual description is dispositive of the issue. Second, it's also important to remember that Thacker applied an analytical framework that is unique to public corporations with sue and be sued clauses like the one in the TVA Act. So as Thacker explained, public corporations are unique because they engage in commercial activities that may be identical to those of private corporations, and Congress thus intended to place them on a level playing field with respect to their amenability to suit for commercial activities. And therefore, such sue and be sued clauses are strictly construed, are liberally construed.
I mean, if we were not constrained by any prior precedent, I think based on Thacker, we would probably find that the same two-step, I'm just speaking for myself now, I would probably find that the same two-step process that Thacker comes up with under TVA, the TVA Act, would apply here to the SAA. But I don't think we're writing on a clean slate here.
Yeah, I think it is very important to remember that the court is not writing on a clean slate. So again, the only question before the court is whether this court's precedents have been abrogated. But I do want to try to make clear that the Burr analysis that the Supreme Court applied in Thacker is not necessarily the analysis that this court, even if it were writing on a clean slate, would apply in the context of the Suits and Admiralty Act. Again, if you read Thacker, it repeatedly emphasizes that it is discussing the commercial activities of a public corporation. It's discussing a sue and be sued clause that is liberally construed. And everything about that is different than the Suits and Admiralty Act, which is a traditional waiver of sovereign immunity for a traditional government agency engaged in traditional governmental activities. And so my contention is that the Burr analysis that Thacker applied is not even relevant to this case. It's simply a mode of analysis that's addressed to a different kind of situation. So I do not think that this court should apply Burr or conclude that Thacker abrogated this court's decisions in any way.
Your weakest argument is in relation to the claim against the TVA, because the sovereign immunity waiver provision in the TVA Act is more specific than the waiver under the Suits and Admiralty Act. So the TVA Act waiver provision should govern, shouldn't it?
You know, I don't want to sort of step on TVA's toes here. I mean, I think they'll be better equipped to address those arguments. Again, I would just...
All right, we'll ask your co-counsel that question then.
Mm-hmm. If the court has no further questions, I'd be happy to cede the rest of my time to TVA so that they can discuss these points that the court has raised.
All right, thank you very much, Mr. Shaw. We'll hear next from Mr. Aliff. We're going to bring that up to 8 minutes since Mr. Shaw has given him his time. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court, David Aliff for TVA. So I'd like to focus in the interest of time on the options I think this court has available to it to affirm the district court, and no matter really how this court decides to handle the discretionary function issue, and that's because of plaintiff's failure to state a claim under the Good Samaritan Doctrine. And Judge Rosenbaum and Judge Wilson, I know you both asked about that question a minute ago, and I think that's the appropriate framework to start looking at here, because that option, and Chief Judge Pryor mentioned it in his opinion on the denial of initial hearing en banc, but there's another piece to it, and it's that the failure to state a claim under the Good Samaritan Doctrine is simultaneously a jurisdictional defect here. And I think, Judge Wilson, you asked whether TVA would have a duty because this was a privately owned duck blind, and that was what the district court found. That hasn't been challenged on appeal. And I think my friend said that it's conceptually no different than a wet floor at a grocery store. Well, respectfully, I think it's a whole heck of a lot different than a wet floor, because we're not dealing with a traditional premises liability fact pattern. Those cases that my friend cited that involve the liability of a cruise ship owner to its passengers, they just...
I don't have the complaint in front of me now, but he says there's an allegation in the complaint that the defendant should have known that the duck blind was there. It should have known. And why isn't that enough?
I think because what the court found was that what caused the injury here was a privately owned hazard to navigation. And the two plaintiffs were traveling across the lake. That water is owned by the state of Alabama. So that's why those landowner liability, that paradigm is really ill-suited to this fact pattern. And that puts you into the general admiralty rule, which is that unless there's some affirmative statute, the government generally doesn't have an obligation to mark, warn, or remove hazards to navigation. And the plaintiffs haven't pointed to any TVA statutory obligation to do so. And then layered on top of that would be the general admiralty rule that the government doesn't have a tort duty to keep the navigable waters safe. So that leaves you with, in this case, you come back to the Suits and Admiralty Act private person standard. Private persons generally don't have tort duties to regulate, to mark, to warn, to remove obstructions in navigable waters. But this court has addressed similar issues in both the Howell and the Zelaya case, and then the Supreme Court decision in Indian Towing.
And so what's your best case for that proposition that it doesn't matter whether or not they should have known that it was there? What's your best case for that proposition?
Yeah, so this court's decision in Howell, there was an FTCA case, but it's very similar type allegations. And the best case for this court to look at that's, I think, really on all fours with what we have here, and it brings out this jurisdictional defect and the failure to state a claim, is the Sixth Circuit's decision in Good versus Ohio Edison. That was a Suits and Admiralty Act case. It involved a very similar hazard to navigation that we have here, also subject to a government permit. And there, like here, the district court dismissed the claims against the government on discretionary function grounds. But on appeal, the Sixth Circuit expressly declined to consider discretionary function, and instead, it affirmed the district court's dismissal for lack of jurisdiction because the plaintiffs had failed to state a claim, had failed to establish maritime liability under the Good Samaritan Doctrine. So I think that's a really important case to look at. Two more I would give you is Zelaya versus United States and the Supreme Court decision in Brownback versus King, because it talks about, those are FTCA cases, but they talk about something that's very similar. The SAA and the FTCA, they both have immunity waivers that are predicated on a private person standard. And what those courts said is that where you have the merits and the elements of jurisdiction, where those are intertwined, basically the elements of the waiver, the private person standard, that the failure to state a claim also deprives the court of jurisdiction. So I think those are instructive.
Let me ask you a little bit about the failure to state a claim then. Your friend on the other side of the aisle here, I assume, is relying on the allegations in the complaint between paragraphs 56 and about maybe 60 or so. And in those allegations, and he'll correct me if I'm wrong, but in those allegations, it basically says, you know, that the duck blind had existed in a navigable waterway since at least 2006, and both the TVA and federal government, through the Coast Guard and Corps of Engineers, had oversight responsibilities and performed operations in the general area prior to the incident. The United States and TVA wantonly and or recklessly failed to exercise reasonable care under the circumstances, blah, blah, blah. So I am understanding that to be saying that you basically had constructive knowledge, at least I'm assuming that's what he's trying to say, or the inference would be, of the hazard because it had existed for 16 years and the federal government and the TVA had oversight responsibilities and performed operations in that area before the incident. What is your response to that?
So two responses, Your Honor. First, TVA manages about 40,000 miles of river and lake, 11,000 miles of shoreline. So presumably a TVA boat had passed it in the past, but I think—
Needle in a haystack.
A needle in a haystack. But at the same time, the rule in Admiralty is, especially where this wasn't, there's no dispute, this wasn't constructed by TVA or the government at all. It was constructed by private persons at some unknown time. That doesn't impose a tort duty on the government to mark it, to warn it, to remove it. That's
what if you did know about it? Would it impose a duty?
I don't think so. I think you're still in the regulator enforcer context. That's the premise of my friend's entire claims, is to foist a tort duty onto TVA and the government to regulate or enforce where there is no statutory duty and there is no general duty.
And again, what's your best case for that?
Howe is a great case. Faust, the Fourth Circuit case. Faust is one I would cite you to definitely look at, the Fourth Circuit case. This court's decision in U.S. Fire Insurance Company versus U.S. 806 F. 2nd 1529, 1986 case, also talked about and that actually cites back to a much older Fifth Circuit case. So that's probably the best case from this court's precedent to look at for why the government, just as a general matter, doesn't have a duty to keep the waterways safe. So under Zelaya and Howe and Indian Towing, that puts you in the regulator enforcer context. That's the Good Samaritan Doctrine. And I think probably that's why my colleague in their brief is casting about for a tort framework that would fit this case, but none of them do. They're cruise ship cases, they're cases where the government actually constructed the hazard to navigation, or they're cases that involve a wharfinger or a pier operator's duty. None of those fit this case. That's why it falls under the general admiralty rules, and that's why the Good Samaritan Doctrine is their only way forward, and it's an alternative ground to affirm here.
Okay, quick question then.
Yes.
Is the SAA the exclusive remedy, and if so, why?
Yes, it is. And it is because I think the easy answer is 100-plus years of precedent make it crystal clear that the exclusive means to bring all admiralty claims against federally owned corporations, even those with soon-be-sued clauses like TVA. And to come back to Judge Wilson's question earlier, in this case, the Suits and Admiralty Act is the more specific, and the TVA Act is the more general. I think you can look back at this court's decision in Savage Services that really makes that very clear. And this court's own precedent makes clear that it's the particular claim that is the key to identifying the correct immunity waiver. This court said that in Zelaya, and it said that elsewhere. FDIC versus Meyer exemplifies that same principle. So that's why, I guess at a base level, the Suits and Admiralty Act is exclusive, and then you layer on top of that the obligation of the courts to harmonize the different mosaic of the statutory immunity waivers that we have. Unless there are further questions of me, would respectfully request that the district court be affirmed.
All right, thank you very much. Mr. Rouse, you have 4 minutes.
Just a couple years ago in Kurtz, the Supreme Court said that Congress may choose to waive the government's immunity, and courts permit a suit against the government when the statute allows it. It said that the immunity waiver, the scope of it, trains on the statutory text, and it said that dismissing a claim would negate what Congress has clearly authorized. These are broad rules. The judiciary cannot rewrite a statute, period. They cannot be labeled dictum through fine distinctions. There is no canon of donut holes where the failure to speak to a specific circumstance that falls within a broader rule creates a tacit exception. The law is instead clear that the Supreme Court's holdings include explications of the governing rules of law and those portions of the opinion necessary to the result. What was necessary in the result of Williams and its progeny is that the suits in Admiralty Act can be rewritten by the judiciary to create an exception where Congress has not. And since then, the Supreme Court has very clearly said that doing that exact thing is not allowed. Thacker is the exact same case, the exact same case. It happened on the same lake. Yes, it was the TVA, but the same principles apply. The judiciary cannot impose the FTCA onto another immunity waiver that very clearly says that the sole question, the one and only question, is whether a private party can be sued for this conduct. That is what the Supreme Court held in Eastern Transport, and that is what the former Fifth Circuit held in DeBart 11. When it comes to the specific facts of this case, the SAA renders the government liable exactly like a private person. Question here is whether a private landowner that has a hazard sticking up out of its own ground into a navigable waterway and presents a hazard, can that person be sued for that? The answer is clearly yes, because that's the duty, a duty to protect from foreseeable danger. And as the landowner here, the government has that obligation. Williams and its progeny were simply wrong, and the rewriting of the Admiralty Act cannot stand. Beyond that, the conduct at issue is simply not the sort of conduct that is supposed to be immunized by any sort of discretionary function exception, right? And either way, the TVA Act fully waives the TVA's immunity regardless of the suits in Admiralty Act.
So let me ask you a question. Let's say that the SAA did explicitly say that it was the exclusive remedy for Admiralty claims against all federal corporations. In that case, would the TVA Act's repeal clause displace it?
It would, because the repeal clause was created after the SAA, and the SAA was, when it was amended, did not include any sort of language. But there's nothing in the SAA today that says it is the exclusive waiver of immunity for Admiralty. That was the judiciary saying that. The only exclusivity provision in the SAA is one that says that it's exclusive of any other action against the agent or employee that may have caused the tort. So the exclusivity provision is solely from Johnson and a couple other Supreme Court cases. But those cases say that it's only exclusive if it provides a remedy. And their whole argument here is that the SAA does not provide a remedy. And so even if you accept that, then you must also accept that the SAA does not provide a remedy, therefore it is not exclusive, and therefore the plaintiffs can proceed at least against the TVA under the TVA Act, for which it has no discretionary function immunity as established in Thacker.
All right. Thank you very much, counsel. All righty, our next case is